Welcome back to Expert Instruction, the Teach by Design podcast, where we dive deeper into the research surrounding student behavior by talking with the people implementing these practices, where they work, and with the students they support. I'm Megan Cave.
I'm Danielle Triplett.
Danielle's back, everybody.
Yay!
We muddled along without her for a couple of months, but we're so glad. It was so nice to have you in the studio today.
Glad to be back.
Just staring into your lovely little eyes.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for keeping it going while I took some time off. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I appreciate all of my colleagues who jumped in to fill in as some guest co-hosts while you were away.
I think they enjoyed it. It seemed fun.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the thing that we wanted to let everybody know about, or at least remind everybody about, is that we've got a little thing going, or you do, called our PBIS Apps community.
Yeah,
you want to tell everybody, remind them?
Remind everybody what the community of practice is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's something that, I mean, I may be spearheading it, but it takes a team.
Yeah.
I want, you know, we have lots of seats at the table and folks from our department involved with this. And so, yeah, we bring folks together once a month. It's free. It's national, open to anybody who's implementing PBIS, especially folks that are at the district level or doing in those kind of coaching or coordinator roles. This seems to be really relevant to them. And we explore topics. We've moved away. We tend to be experts here at the UO and are used to kind of disseminating information and giving lectures. And that is not what this is about.
No,
this is about maybe a little bit of content, a little bit of reminding folks where resources are, and a lot of time just to discuss and connect and share and problem solve and ask questions. Sometimes create more questions, but it's kind of like, okay, how are you doing this? Or what does this mean to you? How have you seen this go in your school or district? And so, we're really excited. Our next one that folks could join will be March 14th.
Great.
So the link will be here to sign up.
Yes,
so
the link will be in our description.
Yep.
The topic is TBD, but you know it's going to be super relevant and important. Our February event happened on Valentine's Day.
Yes.
And all of those resources are also posted on our website. But if you're like me and you always need a reminder about when things happen, there's also a place where you can click and you can sign up to get those reminders. We have a little mailing list specific to our PBIS apps community folks. And so, sign up for that and we'll always remind you when events are happening and you can sign up.
Yeah.
Great.
Do it. Join us. Bring a friend, bring a colleague. We'd love to have you there.
Yeah. And in our episode today, we're kind of building on this topic of equity and what it means to include everybody. And something that we know can happen is that not everybody experiences school in the same way. And so we really wanted to talk to our friend and colleague from the Smart Center today to really explore that idea and what it means to get kids the support that they need, even when the support you think they need is not always the culturally relevant thing to do.
Right.
And how can you build those bridges with community members?
Yep. Yep. It was great talking to Mary. And I've known Mary Metter for over 10 years. We realized as we were chatting. And so she joins us from the University of Washington, the Smart Center there. Mary is an implementation coach, and she works with schools to implement proactive systems of support. She brings with her a passion for systems change, fidelity of implementation, and culturally responsive PBIS, social emotional learning, and mental health. We really had a rich conversation with her.
Oh, we for sure did. Mary, the Smart Center folks, we share in our in our mission of building bridges between evidence-based practices and getting them actually into practice,
right
into schools.
Yes.
And so it's really awesome to hear from her and how she's able to translate that research into practice, no matter the context.
Yes, she's incredible at it. And I really, you know, some of the things that stood out from the conversation for me, Megan, was things like centering student needs, right? Like she said that more than once, and
I bolded it
in my notes. Like students are at the center of this, and sometimes we as the adults get focused on what we can do, what we know about. And so really making sure that kiddos are at the center of this. and really doing things with the community that you're serving, not to them.
Yeah.
And some of the ways she did that was setting up at the beginning of rolling things out, things like listening groups or focus groups for families and students at the start of it.
Yeah. With, she said they had a group of 90 people.
90 people.
That they were meeting with regularly.
Totally. I'm beyond impressed by that. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to coordinate, but also then it, you know, the end result is better for it.
The
right?
amount of support
voices
that you get.
And, mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And she also really focused on the idea of going slow to go far. So that sometimes, you know, through this work, we know, right. It's not an overnight thing that you can just send the, you know, implement something like PBIS and it's all better. Like it takes time to do these things and to do them really well.
Totally.
So really excited to hear her emphasize that and, and kind of how she did that with different districts she worked with.
Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to do this work, but it's super valuable going through the process of defining the work that you need to accomplish, making sure that everybody has their values stated, and that you're all working on the same goal of getting kids the support that they need in a timely way.
Yep.
We think that you're going to get a lot out of this. We certainly did.
Yes.
So join us. Listen in.
Yes.
Here's Mary.
Here's Mary. Thank you.
Hi, Mary. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've had you on before. So this is like old hat. Yeah,
welcome
like
back.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, talking to an old friend. I guess before we've had you on here obviously before with your colleague Rayanne, and we didn't get much of an opportunity to talk about where you work and the work that you do. So tell us a little bit about the Smart Center and the mission that you all have and the work that you do to accomplish that mission.
Yeah, so the UW Smart Center, University of Washington Smart Center, stands for the School Mental Health Assessment Research and Training Center. So we are just that, a research and a training center. And the mission at UW Smart is to promote high quality, culturally responsive programs, practices, and policies that help meet the range of needs that we see from our students in general education and special education contexts, right? And that those needs involve social, emotional, behavioral, and mental health needs that come up for our students. We are a national leader in developing and supporting the implementation of evidence-based practices in schools. So those practices primarily focus on prevention, early intervention, and intensive supports, or what in education we look at as like a multi-tiered system of supports. Mm-hmm. So what's neat about the center is that not only do we help train on that, but we also have researchers, right, who do research on specific interventions. And then our goal would be to then help train and help districts select evidence-based interventions based off of their needs. You know, my colleague was supposed to be here with me today, Rayanne. She's not because she's sick, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hi, Rayanne.
We miss you, Rayanne.
We miss you, Rayanne. But our role and all of our trainers, the role that we play in supporting this mission can be us on research projects. So we have been on a number of them that are implemented within the educational setting. And then also through our work as trainers with schools and districts where not only do we help design and train the district and building leadership teams on the integration of social, emotional, behavioral, and mental health data systems and practices, but also partnering with these districts to help them select evidence-based programs and interventions and tools that would fit within their multi-tiered system of support.
Gotcha.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's so exciting to always to hear other people talk about their work the way that you're talking about it, because we do so much of the same stuff here at the University of Oregon. And so it's always nice to know that even up at the University of Washington, those Huskies are also doing good work.
For sure.
We can bring people together from UW and UFO.
Absolutely.
A long history of being rivalries, right? Talk about the good of community and supporting kids.
Totally. Exactly.
Well, and in that way, I think that, you know, the conversation around mental health supports and behavioral supports, I mean, these things have to overlap. And so I think that's where schools are doing it, the work too. It's like they don't see this as siloed. This needs to be maybe right. one team guiding it, right? Exactly. We're all about that integration too.
We know that we talked with you and with Rayanne about universal screening and the way that you all do that work with schools and districts. And I was just curious to, we wanted to give you a platform to share why universal mental health screenings are important and why you all include that in your work.
Yeah, I'm like, Rayanne and I are both very passionate about universal screening. We always have been. So I'm very thrilled that we get the opportunity to kind of speak to it, because I think it can be kind of a scary thing when we talk about mental health and we talk about universal screening and what does that mean for our kids when, especially when we don't, when we're not communicating with our community about what it is and why it's important. So I guess I'll just start by saying that, and I can send this to you all, but you know, there was a behavioral health audit done in the state of Washington a few years back. And what came from that behavioral health audit, or something very important that came from that, was that universal screening is actually the basic foundation for behavioral health systems within schools. And that's because screening helps us not only identify strengths, but helps us identify student needs. And it does this at the earliest sign of symptoms before they become disruptive to a student's life and more difficult to treat later on, right? So when I think about universal screening, I think about how it's just kind of common practice or best practice to do this with academics. We would screen for academics and then we support students based off of what they would need. And yet doing it for social, emotional, behavioral, and mental health strengths and concerns feels a little bit touchy. I think that has a lot to do with our community needs and our values and kind of how we view mental health within a specific community. So although we have learned that universal screening is the basic foundation for behavioral mental health systems within a school, there are a lot of things that we would need to address before just coming in and saying, okay, we're going to do universal screening because it's best for kids. That's not always understood. And so I guess a few things that I would like to say is that universal screening does enhance our continuum of supports, or that multi-tiered system of support framework. It is a core or critical feature of it, right? And so we have a colleague, Dr. Kurt Hatch, who talks a lot about doing like PBIS light. a lot of times we get stuck in education doing a lot of the light version of a framework or an initiative and how essentially that doesn't really serve our students or our community best, because we need to be doing it as it was intended, which means to full implementation. I like to say when we're not doing universal screening, we're actually kind of doing like PBIS or MTSS light, because we're not implementing all the core features of PBIS. And if we're looking at it in this like in a proactive or preventative framework, universal screening not only helps us identify strengths and needs to see if students might need more beyond what we're providing at tier one, but it helps us monitor or measure the overall health of our system. So it's helping us be able to look at how healthy is our tiered system of support, how strong is our tier one, and where might we need to refine the tier one so that we have less students who need more tier two and tier three supports. And then, like I said, it does help us identify, I guess it helps us identify not only, I feel like we think about it as we need to identify students who might need tier two and tier three, but it helps us look at the strength of our community as well and kind of determine what pro-social skills do we need to be teaching so that at a tier one level, so that we could build more resilient students, right? And we can help them build resiliency. So I guess we can do two things. We can use universal screening to monitor the health of our system and refine tier one, and we can use it to identify students who might need more than what we're providing at the tier one level.
What you're talking about too is reminding me, we talk a lot on our side of things around behavioral data, right? With referrals to the office. So just looking at the behaviors that are happening in school. And there's been a lot of discussion around the word equity. Lately, there's been a lot of discussion around the word inclusion. And what you're talking about related to these universal screeners that that you all do, And the hesitancy there is that some of the things that Danielle and I have been talking about are like once you collect this data, you're compelled to action. You're compelled to do something about it. And so it can be, it can feel intimidating, like a daunting task to look at those data and to think I'm supposed to do something about it with what resources, where, how, sway. Like it's not quite intuitive or comfortable. And so this work around defining what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it is really important. But we wanted you just to check in with you and see your experience. Danielle, you've had experience with this, right? Where teams are collecting data and then what happens?
Well, I was the experience I was thinking I have was more when we were trying to get schools in a large district to do some of these universal mental health screeners, and they just knew that with that came the responsibility to respond as they uncover some of the That's need right. and that they just didn't have the resources to be able to do that. And it was, gosh, do we just do this at one grade level and scale it up? And how do we kind of navigate that? So I think we're curious to hear how that's played out for you in your work, Mary, in working with schools. Like, do you build the systems first so that when you uncover the need, you're ready? Or, you know, I mean,
are you building the plane as you fly?
Exactly.
It.
Like, how does that work? And I know that Washington, the way they're funding schools, looks different than Oregon and the other 40 states. We're all, you know, in different places with that.
This comes up so much in any type of, right? Like, any important or critical program or tool that we're using in education, it's like, well, what do we do first? Do we wait until we're fully ready? And I'm going to go back to Danielle. You were just talking about working in a larger district. Rhiannon and I have both worked in a number of different districts of all different sizes. And I'm thinking right now specifically of one district that we've worked with where screening, we had tried to get screening like up and running several times and we were learning so much in the process, like of our tool selection, are we using the best tool for our community? And something that kept coming up for us was that we didn't, our team wasn't like representative enough. We weren't asking the right people to help us address some of these concerns. We were kind of trying to do it on our own and trying to get ready so that we could roll this out with all of our sites. And what we learned was that we actually need a like more representative team to address some of these challenges and barriers that are going to come up and questions that are coming up from our community. So one, working with your legal department, like I will stand by that. We thought that's going to be a barrier for us because they're going to tell us no.
Yeah,
we don't
right.
But actually our legal team, like bringing them in, they surprised us. So we brought the legal team in and we were asking them all these questions about screening because we were having a lot of educators talk about like, what is our responsibility? What happens when we ask these questions and we aren't ready to respond? So I'll talk about readiness in a second. But the legal team actually kind of communicated to us that screening and not doing anything, like anything about what might come from those data is unethical, right? Yeah. Like we can't screen and then not intervene. Yep. That is, that's not, we're going to have issues with that. Yep. But they also said, and knowing that our students are facing a mental health crisis right now, or all of these challenges are coming up from other data that exists within the state and for our district, and then not doing something because we're afraid about what's going to come up from that is also as equally as unethical and like can make us liable for things as well. So we thought we were going to go into this meeting with the legal team and us like, no, you can't ask these questions because we were at this time doing like multiple, like different, we were doing a universal screener and then we were doing like a second screener as well. And so they actually confirmed that, no, we need to be screening universally because we have data at the state level that says our community, right? Like our students are facing high levels of anxiety, high levels of depression, are feeling like they have an adult to turn to, are feeling a little bit hopeless, right? And so knowing this and not screening to detect students early on is also a problem for us. And so we then thought, like, that's great. Our legal team supports us. And so what we learned from that conversation was it's actually our job to be building readiness for our school so that they can feel comfortable and safe with responding. And it wasn't that we needed to go into these schools and kind of say, oh, you're not going to be ready because you don't have all these tier 2 and tier 3 interventions. prepared. It was actually that we needed to go in and kind of examine, what are you already doing really well that's working? Mm. What good practices do you already have in place that are evidence-based, that are showing outcomes for your students? And then what are the ones that you have in place that are like kind of being implemented that aren't really showing a lot of outcomes that we can maybe get rid of? Mm-hmm. And like focus more in on the evidence base. So what we call that process intervention mapping. So that's what we started doing with all of our teams. And I can send you a sample of that. We posted at all of our conferences because people are like, we want to do that.
Yes.
So intervention mapping, where you go through, right, and you list out what are the things that we're providing at tier one that all students receive for their social, emotional, behavioral, mental health. Are we seeing outcomes? How do we know that this is working for our students? And if we know that it's working for our kids, let's put more of our effort into that intervention or into those few. And we did this at a tier one, tier two, and tier three level. And what a lot of our building teams will learn is, I actually have this quote from a principal in a district we're working with who said, I'm learning that we are competitive. We don't need to be the best and have like this huge menu of interventions. Mm. What we need to do is have a smaller list of interventions that are evidence-based, that are working for our community. And then we need to put all of our efforts into making those work.
Ooh,
instead of like adding more and more and more. And I was like, that's exactly what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%.
That's a great example. I love that, Mary. Yeah. Sometimes we do feel like, oh, we need a menu of options. We need all these different things. And yet we don't have the capacity to do all of them really well. Like, let's
focus. And this is sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah,
on that one.
It's okay. Keep going. Yeah.
Well, this is why I guess when people get kind of scared, they're like, well, what if something comes up and we don't know what to do?
Yeah.
This is why building readiness for any new initiative is critical, especially universal screening, because in our like readiness building phase, not only can we go through and see what like good practices do we already have in place that will be ready to support kids once they screen and we see, we've got some kids who need more. Mm-hmm. But doing it not only for the tier two and tier three interventions, but for tier one, so that we can say, ugh, our tier one is not supporting most of our kids. We actually need to kind of do better at tier one, right? Like, important.
Yep.
But also the building readiness phase is an opportunity for us where we can partner with stakeholders and determine what our community purpose and need is for universal screening and any initiative. And I would say that is probably the most important thing. So we worked with a district who was as part of their integration of school mental health within their multi-tiered system of support. What a mouthful.
It's why we do acronyms,
right? We have acronyms.
We heard them say, like, we want to do universal screening, but we already know some barriers that are going to come from this. Mm. For our specific community, our families are going to push back on this because the beliefs they have around mental health are, we don't want you focusing on that. We don't need mental health support. Like, we can take care of it on our own. And so what we learned was, like, first we need to map out our stakeholders. Who do we need to bring in intentionally to be a part of this kind of representative team so that we can address some of those concerns that are coming up? And what we learned, I feel like what we always learn, is that families and students need to be a part of the process from the ground up. And even though that might take more time, doing it leads to outcomes that you wouldn't even imagine. Like, families who are like, I'm on board, I want to help with this, tell me how I can champion this work. Because not only are we like including them to build this process for their students and for their kids, they're able to kind of talk about what their needs are and what their cultural beliefs are and how they need to be addressed. And then we can kind of build that out together in a communication plan. Like, what is the information that we're going to need to share with all families and students? And how are we going to make sure that it makes sense to everyone who's part of the community? So I would say, like, building readiness is so important. And some key things to do in that are, one, take a look at your team. How representative is it? Have we done a stakeholder map where we say, like, these are the voices and the strengths that we already have as part of this team. Mm-hmm. And here are the voices and the strengths that we're actually missing, which is often students and families.
Yep.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing outreach to students and families? Because I know just from my experience, there's a lot of the same families and the same students that show up to offer support for different schools. And so I'm curious if you have any strategies for trying to extend that reach and get some voices around the table that maybe aren't represented so often from that group.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the basic ones that people know about is are we doing robocalls? Are we doing emails? Are we posting it on our website where families know? Are we pushing it out through notifications to the platform that families and students have access to? So that's one way to do it. But like you said, sometimes that would only yield some of the same types of the same people that are always the ones who show up So I would say also pushing into the community. So sometimes just going to schools at drop off or pickup time or and just seeing who show and just I think just approaching them as educators, asking our teachers to talk with their family members about it as well. This going in, pushing into schools and to kind of different community places has proven to be really successful when you're especially at the secondary schools, because students actually do want to be a part of this. And so I've had experience going into a high school where I'm like, who are some students who are not typically showing up to some of these, different committees and what classrooms can we show up to and what teachers have relationships with these kids that they can kind of talk to them about it. So I worked with a high school who had a couple of teachers and favorite teachers who have really strong relationships with their kids. And they brought a whole group of students who were willing to volunteer after school to be a part of how do we create more inclusive discipline practices within our school? And it was so fascinating to hear, these are my experiences as a student here. And these are ways I think that we can do better. And it was we learned so much from, we had three or four sessions with them where it was okay, great. Now we can build this discipline policy playbook where it's this is how kids will respond when things come up. So I would say going into the community, leveraging who you know, the educators you know, and seeing can they talk with students that they have strong relationships with? And then also then those students will talk with their parents and their caregivers and families and say hey, mom, would you want to come in? Right. And this. So
Mary, I really commend you on that work and think I'm just such an advocate for uplifting student voice. Too often we're just talking about the kids or whatever. And so getting them involved, lifting up their voices and letting them be part of it, I think creates a richer result, like you said. So kudos, kudos for that.
Thank you. At that same school, their students were actually also a huge part in building their PBIS framework. They were the ones who did their school-wide expectations. They did videos on it with they built them and then they did videos on it that were wraps and I don't know, it was incredible. let them do it.
Right.
The students lead the way and you'll see light in the work.
I'm curious though, too, you've mentioned a district that you had worked with, and I'm sure you've worked with several in the past that where you come in and you think this is what's going to be best, but you know, you can anticipate what those barriers are and what you think is best is maybe the worst thing that you could do, coming in right off the bat. So what are the things that you do to prepare for situations like that? How do you anticipate what some of those barriers are and how do you get ready for a meeting like that?
Yeah. So I guess this is where I'll talk a little bit about just another district we work with on selection of an evidence-based program for their community. And we knew going into this community that as educators, we all have our own assumptions. We all have our own values. We all have our own beliefs as well, right? Mm-hmm. But as educators, we have to recognize that what we're doing is not for us. It's for the students. And sometimes I do think it can be difficult for us to remember that we are centering what students need, not what we need, not what our beliefs are, or what our values are, but this is about what our students need. And so I think it's important before you go into any district, right? Recognizing every district is different. There's different contextual things that come into play. Like I said, different political beliefs, there's different values. There's all different types of components of a system that you have to navigate. And so we have to check ourselves before going into any district and remember that we're coming in to center students and a student need. Mm. And so I guess I'll go back to kind of my stance on building readiness and remembering that change is hard for anyone. And so I guess kind of learning about this district, maybe through looking at what their current data is telling us and why there might be a need, and then maybe learning from a wide variety of community members some of the challenges that they're experiencing is really important. And one way that I feel like that the UW Smart Center does a good job at this is one, like through leading different focus groups or what we call listening sessions as well, where we're just hearing people out on kind of what the need is. And then we're using those data to kind of help inform our work or maybe the selection of an evidence-based program. So in working with one district on selection of an evidence-based program, what we had learned was that there was a lot of resistance to this specific change that was coming into their community.
Sure.
And there were a lot of people who had very specific beliefs on this and who actually didn't want the change to happen at all. And so, like I said, change is difficult for anyone, right? Like, it's difficult for these families who are like, they have their own set of thoughts about what this program is going to do for their students or to their students. And then we, as people who are coming in to help lead the selection, come in being like, how can you not want this? It's going to be best for students, right? So there's a difference in what our thought processes and beliefs are. So working together with our families and our students is really important, especially in this, and going slow to go far. So we're not just coming in and going to rush this process where we're going to quickly help you select something. We're actually going to take you through this journey of selection where we as a community are going to help you define how representative is your team? Do you have family members and students who are part of this team? And if not, making sure that your team includes that before moving through any of the selection process. And that can be for a program or for, you know, like a universal screener. Once you have a good representation of people, so for this community, it was specifically making sure that we had a large number of caregivers and family members who are part of this team, because they were going to be the ones who were going to help us kind of like identify barriers that were going to come up with implementation.
Gotcha.
So we had this team or this committee, and the selection process was made up of over 90 people, which is really large because normally a selection committee is very small. And so, a big number, like we had quite a few family members who were there. And in the first year, what we knew was we couldn't just jump into like, let's start thinking about what need is. Instead, we had to talk, like, define what are our community values? What are our beliefs, current beliefs around this new program that we're going to try to select for our kids? And what do we think our kids need? And who knows better than what their kids need than their family members or their caregivers or the students themselves, right? I know educators, we have also we have the best interests of our students in mind, but also their parents and their caregivers and the students themselves do as well. So working together on that and centering our student needs. So together, one, like that stakeholder mapping and seeing who do we need to include in this process was like step one. Once we brought this team together that was made up of families and students, we talked about specific maybe fears and beliefs that they all had. And then kind of addressing them. And then we knew what learning needed to happen, right? As educators, okay, great. We can create a learning over the next several months so that we can kind of learn more about what is social emotional learning? What is social emotional behavioral mental health screening? And how is this going to benefit our community? And how is it actually going to address some of the fears that you're having for your kids or some of the fears that you have as students as well? And that learning and kind of defining what our values were as a team and as a community, it was a long process. It was a year long process of learning together. And in that year, defining what a curriculum or program or tool would need to do for us, that took a year. And then after that year, we went into like, okay, so we've defined our team and our cult, like our values within our community. And we've defined based off of data what our students need. And then now we can start kind of building, before we kind of look at different programs or tools that would help meet these needs, we can start building out like a rubric together that would help us be able to assess any program, curriculum, social, emotional, behavioral, mental health screening tool that are going to meet these criteria that we defined as very important for us. And then we can rank them based off of this rubric. So I'd say kind of those three, like those three major things is making sure your team is representative through stakeholder mapping, making sure all the voices and strengths like of our community are present on this team, and then going through and defining what our needs are and what our values are, and then engaging and learning together around this. Because in that process too, more barriers will come up. Like parents or students or caregivers will say like, well, what about this, right? Like things that we might not anticipate as an educator. And so it's very helpful to be able to address these barriers within this year long so that you're not later when you're rolling out or implementing having to pause because all these barriers that we didn't think of have now come up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're describing a few things here that are just, my brain is going really fast. The first thing is that you're talking about defining what words mean to certain people. And that's something that has been on my brain a lot lately, that what Danielle, and after talking with Danielle for a little while the other day, we kind of landed on this idea that the work of the thing is way more important than the word, and that the work of defining what it is that you're trying to accomplish is the thing that you really should be doing, because we can get so upset about what we think a thing is that when we get into the work of, well, what do kids need? What do our students need? What do our families need? We actually have a lot of common ground there around what it is that we're trying to achieve. So let's talk about that. You know, I won't even mention a mental health screener. I won't mention the word equity and inclusion. I won't talk about it. We're going to talk about what it is that, what's the need here. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to work on finding the things that fit the need that we can all agree on, match that value that we have. Mm-hmm. You're also talking about, that this is all a commitment to the long game. That like when we say that, we really mean it. Like you took a year to do that work and to get to build these relationships with this large group of people who were ultimately going to be the champions of this work moving forward. And I'm curious, do you ever just get really impatient and like? As you're in like month six of this, you're like, oh man, right? You know what we could do right now, just right now. Yeah. Like, how do you hang on to like, this is valuable work that we're doing and defining the, what we're going to do as a committee and as a group, with also like, we've got a need that needs to be met right now. How do you balance that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is where I wish Rayanne was here because she would have summed up. That's what she has said to me too. I always say like, call an intervention, call a framework, like call it what it is. Let's not make up all these other names. And she says like, why does the name matter?
Yeah.
If it is going to create a barrier for us helping this district or school implement this, let them call it whatever they want. And I was like, this is where my patience, like, I love that. I've learned a lot in the, like over the years in working, you know, in a school, kids are, it's like, we can talk. I worked at an elementary school as a counselor. So talking with kids, it's like, they'll let me call it what it needs to be called.
Yeah.
But working with adults, there are like certain beliefs and values and things that they, it would create a barrier. And I guess that's the number thing is why allow this small thing of a word to become barrier and doing what's best for kids. And so always coming back to like, we're centering student needs. Sometimes it's just going, every time we came back together with this group who is adopting this social emotional learning curriculum or program, we came, like, there was one time I remember we didn't come back to like those initial slides of our, here's our values, here's the student need. And then here's the adult need of like what we need to see from our curriculum to help meet these student needs. And even not coming back to that every time, it was like, you know what? Next time we need to make sure we're coming back to
we'll start
like,
there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, start there every time. Mm-hmm. And so I will say that like when you're losing patience around this because you want to go, like the saying is right? Go, is it go fast to go far? What is like, go fast, pedal faster and get, let's get this done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe in that. If you go slow and do things right, that's how we get sustainability. That's how we get, like, if we think about weight loss too, it's like, if you go slow and make small change over time, you're actually going to see more sustainability. Mm-hmm. And so I would say coming back every time to the student need, and remembering, like, this is why we even became a committee in the first place, was because these data, there are students behind these data telling us, like, we have a need to help.
Oh, that's so important to remember. My God, that is so important to remember.
You know what else I'm thinking of, Mary, that you bring up it with this going slow to go far, is that it's creating buy-in, too, by having more voices at the table, right? That idea of people buying into it, people kind of, you know, understanding it, like, you're creating a process for that and lifting voices. And so, and creating kind of a better end result, even though it takes longer. So I would think that those things go hand in hand too. We talk about how buy-in, can we buy in? Well, let's involve people.
Exactly. And that's, I think too, like, that's what happened with that community where they were like selecting this program, is not only at the end of year two, once the, you know, once the rubric was developed and they had selected a curriculum, we had parents coming up to us asking, like, how they word for word said, I came in to be a part of this team and this committee to prevent it from ever happening. I wanted to tear this initiative down.
Wow.
And I'm realizing now how important, like, the, like, staying with it for this whole year, how important it is, not only for these skills for our students to have them, but for me as an adult to have these skills, and how much that would help me as an adult. And so anything that you all need to help champion this work, and anything you need for me to go talk to other families who are feeling resistant, let me know and I'll do that. And it was like, this is so powerful. Like, this is why bringing together families and students, while it might take longer, you're going to have a lot less resistance and you're going to have more balance.
It's true. I've been a part of some conversations around here, just in my professional life, not having anything to do with schools, that have taken time, you know, and you just, I just sit there and I listen to the conversation and I just go, oh, that's interesting. That's cool. But then by the time you get to the end of it, after months of being a part of that, and even just listening, like, I don't take much of an active role. I just listen. And after months of doing that, I have a better understanding of how we got to this point. And now I'm invested. I got to learn, like, it's like sitting through that 3.5-hour movie and you're like, I'm going to finish this thing because I'm in it now. I'm so in it and I got to know how it ends, you know, like, that's kind of, in a way, that can be how it is. Like, information is so powerful. And if you bring people along with you, and explain it as you go, I think you end up in a better place. Even if it takes a year to get there, you know, you end up with way more people behind you than you had to in the beginning. So we've talked a lot about the lessons that you've learned along the way with trying to get kids the support that they need, and to make those supports contextually and culturally relevant to the communities that you all support. If let's talk to the audience here, someone listening is like, yes, I'm in that place. What are some of the big truths that you've taken away from your work and the lessons that you take with you always?
Yeah, I think one is, I guess specifically when it comes to social, emotional, behavioral, and mental health screening, that can be very touchy for people. And we all have our own biases. We all have our own values and beliefs. And like, we as adults, we've got to check ourselves with that and realize that just because I might have my own set of beliefs, right? Yeah. And I have my own biases, like, someone else's are just as valid as me. And so we, like, coming back to centering students in this, and that these students actually need this, and we defined this as a need for our kids through looking at these data, this is going to help us, I guess, do right by them. And so what I guess that overall truth is, like, we need to check ourselves and realize that we need to work with the community that we're actually pushing into, because it's their community. And we need to work together to do what's best for kids. And when you're losing patience, and when you're in month 6 of hearing like some of the same challenges over and over again, remembering that like behavior change is hard, changing someone's like thought process, it would be difficult mm-hmm. for me to do that. And mm-hmm. so like meeting people where they're at, whether that means we're not going to call it this, we're going to call it something else, mm-hmm. or we're going to kind of shift a little bit in how we adopt this screening tool or this program, because what we know is that learning needs to happen first and we're going to take our time. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so I guess to summarize those two things is always centering your students and what the need that you defined as a community was, but also doing that with your parents and students mm-hmm. and your family members, so that, because what's going to come of that is so much greater and better than if you avoid doing that to get it done quicker.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to stick, right? It'll stick way better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love that.
Thank you, Mary.
Yes, thanks for reminding us to center our students in all of this work that we do. I love that.
Yeah, yeah, that we are all in this together, that mm-hmm. even when it seems like we're standing on opposite sides of the coin here, that that really we're all trying to do what's best for kids. Yep. And and remembering that helps to find a way through to collaborate and make sure that we're offering some equitable supports and getting people what they need to be successful, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you so much for being here and for giving us all of these reminders. We appreciate you.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for having me again.
Keep up the great work, Mary. We're so impressed with you and the Smart Center.
Thank you.